Welcome to the Perry Johnson Registrars Podcast, where you can expect the latest news and discussions related to the management systems certification industry. Today's episode is a previously recorded webinar. If you would like to tune in to our upcoming webinars, visit our website at www.pjr.com/webinar or give us a follow on your favorite podcast app. Thank you for tuning in.
Everyone, I'd like to welcome all of you to the premiere of our new webinar. This is called Your Ongoing Relationship with PJR. My name is Joseph Krolikowski. I am the QMS Program Manager. Our topics for today, we're going to talk a little bit about how we feel we are your partner in certification and how this is meant to be a working relationship between ourselves and our clients. We're going to go over the different types of changes that can occur over a certification cycle. We're going to talk a little bit about what are called short notice audits, and then we're going to transition to the dispute process. And then we have some time for your questions and comments at the end of the presentation. Now, as I indicated, PJR views itself as a partner in your certification. And this is an ongoing relationship. This goes beyond getting you under contract and getting you past the initial certification audit. We want you to keep us involved. We want you to think of us as a partner in getting over challenges in your system, and recognizing that we have resources we can offer to help you get the most out of your certification efforts. Now, when we talk about changes, there are a couple of different ways in which these are viewed. And then there are changes that can impact the quality management system and changes that may not have any particular impact. Obviously, all companies face the potential for change over their duration. Some of these changes, as I said, may have very little to no impact. Some of these changes are going to have quite a bit of impact, a significant impact. Your rule of thumb should be that if there is a change that's going to potentially impact your certification, one of the things that you want to do is reach out to us. Let us know that the change is imminent so that we can take the appropriate actions. Now, just so you are aware, we do have some verbiage in our contract regarding this. Any PJR client should have a copy of our official terms and conditions. These are established in a document called the F3. The F3 includes a provision that reads as follows. It states it's incumbent upon the organization to notify PJR in writing and in a timely fashion of material changes. And material changes, this is verbiage that comes from partly from the ISO 17021-1 standard. Now, that is a standard that PJR is held accountable to when we get assessed in the accreditation body assessments. So ANAB, UCAS, they hold us accountable to this. And the specific clause in play here is section 8.5.3, notice of changes by a certified client. So the key term here is material change. And the F3 provides a fairly complete list of what constitutes a material change. So let's go over some of that. The first category of material change is legal. So this is going to include things like ownership of the organization, the legal status of the organization. You know, you may not think, for example, if the company is being changed from ABC Incorporated to ABC LLC, You might not think that's a big deal, but it actually is a big deal. That's a significant change in the legal status of the company. Again, this type of change, it may or may not have an impact on the certification, but PJR needs to be informed. The second category of change you can think of is operational. So this could be things like changes in the scope of operations. And most typically, this is going to be what appears or what is intended to appear on your certificate scope statement. So for example, if you have manufacture of injection molded parts and you want to add to that injection molded parts and rubber products. So this is a change to the scope. That's significant. If you're changing your management system, if you're expanding the processes that you have, if you are changing who the managerial or technical staff is, if you are adding a whole new team or you're adding a whole new manufacturing process or a brand new warehouse, things of that nature. Changes in the number of employees are going to be significant. And that includes adding or reducing the headcount. Those of you that are current clients, you're probably at this point used to being asked by your scheduler, what's the current headcount? And the reason for that is particularly for smaller companies. Even one or two additional employees can have some impact on the required audit time. So all of these operational changes usually are going to bear some impact on the certification. So again, we do need to be kept in the loop when these things happen. Now, the last major category of material change you can think of as physical. So this is going to include, for example, changes in your location. If you're moving, if you are adding a location, maybe you have three buildings and you're condensing down to two. That's also possible. If you've had significant damage to a site, again, let's say you have three buildings and one of your buildings has gone through a fire. So you've got reduced operations at that building. Again, these types of changes usually are going to have some impact on your certification. So we need to be informed so that we can potentially issue an amendment to your contract or possibly something as simple as just ensuring that your auditor is informed of the change as they are planning for the audit. So, in terms of what PJR is obligated to do about a material change, again, the clause in play from ISO 17021 is 8.5.3. And in 8.5.3, it states that PJR has to take action as appropriate. Now, what that action is and how quickly we have to take that action, it's obviously going to be dependent on the nature of the change and on any impact that that change has on your certificate. Now, obviously, some of the changes are going to be judged as having little to no impact at all. That's obviously a possible outcome. Most of the material changes that we encounter are going to require a contractual amendment be written to capture the change and to document its mutual approval by us and by you, the organization. Now, ideally, the reported change will be assessed by our auditors as part of your normal auditing cycle. In other words, if we get word that you've had a change and the auditors are scheduled to be in your facility, say, in 6 to 8 weeks, that's perfect. That means that we'll be able to look at that change as part of the auditing cycle without any special steps being taken. Now, obviously, that's not always going to be possible in all circumstances. And that is where this next topic comes into play. If we are unable to assess the change as part of the normal auditing cycle, in other words, if the regularly scheduled audit is going to be many, many months from now, may be in a position where we have to do what's referred to as a short notice audit. Now, short notice audits, again, this is terminology that comes from ISO 17021, this time section 9.6.4.2. The actual verbiage is that the CB has to do audits of certified clients at short notice in response to changes. Now, we've included that same verbiage in our F3 terms and conditions document, again, making it a binding part of our client contract. In other words, if we get notice of a change and we're not going to be in there anytime soon for the regularly scheduled audit, we may have to do the short notice audit. Now, in terms of how we refer to these items internally, what they're called, typically they're going to be referred to by one of two names. We use the term scope expansion. Scope expansion is typically used when an organization is adding a new building or a new site to their certification. It may also be used for a circumstance where an organization is adding a process that's going to impact what's written into the certificate. So a scope expansion audit. The other term that we typically use is on-site assessment or OA. Now that's kind of a catch-all. That's going to be for any short notice audit that isn't technically a scope expansion. So an ownership change, a significant change in the management, these sorts of things are going to fall under the on-site assessment or OA classification. Now, some of the schemes that we certify to have additional add-on requirements for short notice audits. In the IETF standard, they require what's called a special audit. And the IETF Rules 5th Edition has a whole series of requirements just for special audits. So if you're an IETF client, you're going to want to refer to the Rules 5th Edition for any particulars on how IETF special audits are performed. Now, if you happen to be an AS 9100 client, these are going to be referred to as special audits for aerospace, but the 17021-1 requirements are in play for these assessments. So they have their own name, but essentially the same requirements as what we would do for other schemes, such as ISO 9001. So what's going to happen during a short notice audit? Whatever they're called, the short notice audit is going to generally follow the same steps as a regularly sequenced audit. So what does that mean? Well, first of all, it means that you should expect an audit plan from your auditor. You're going to have an opening and a closing meeting, including if it's a two-hour audit. If it's a short audit, 2 hours, 4 hours, you still have the formalities of an audit plan, an opening, and a closing meeting. These things are required for any type of audit assessment. Your team members are potentially still going to be interviewed, and the auditor obviously is still going to review company documentation. The only difference with a short notice audit is it is intended to be a targeted sampling of the change itself. So let's go through some examples of what that might include. So let's say that we have a site relocation. You've picked up and you've moved up the road or perhaps across state lines to a new facility. These are the types of things that might be looked at during the short notice audit. We might ask for management review meeting assessment of the relocation impact. Have you done an internal audit at your new facility? Have you updated all of your documentation, your policies, any procedures that you have? Have you updated your advertising? Have you updated the contracts that you have with your customers? Have you gone through the steps necessary to get your manufacturing equipment set up, if you happen to have manufacturing equipment? Have you trained any newly hired team members? Now, obviously, that's going to depend on how far the relocation was. Have you informed all relevant interested parties? So not just your customers, but your suppliers and any other relevant interested parties. And has this relocation resulted in any change to the scope of operations? So all of these things are going to be pertinent in the event of a site relocation. Now, if it's an ownership change, if we're doing a special assessment just for an ownership change, the list is going to be a little bit shorter. We're going to look to see, okay, has there been any change in management in terms of who the decision makers are in the quality management system? Have there been any changes in the processes or in the process controls? You know, sometimes a new management team comes in, new ownership comes in, and they do away with the ERP system and start with something new. That can have a significant impact on a quality management system. Again, were customers or interested parties informed? Were there any issues with this from the perspective of customers or other interested parties? And then again, has this ownership change resulted in a change to the scope of operations? How does this impact the certification? And finally, if you've introduced new products or new processes, so this is a scope expansion that doesn't involve a locational change, and it's a similar list of items. We'll begin looking at management review and internal audit from the perspective of, did you look at the changes and assess the impact of the changes? Did you update your documentation? Have you done the appropriate setup and maintenance steps for any new equipment? And particularly if it's a new process, did you train your team, whatever team members are going to be responsible for that new process? That can be a loose end that gets overlooked at times. Now, in terms of nonconformances, it is always possible that there's going to be a nonconformance in any audit assessment. So any audit nonconformance that's issued for a short notice audit, it's going to be handled just like it is during a regularly cycled audit. So that means you'll have the usual timing and the usual expectations in terms of your response, the correction, the extent analysis, the root cause, and the corrective action, the usual pieces. Now, if the short notice audit is going to result in an update to your certificate, the auditor is going to be required to prepare a certificate application reflecting the necessary adjustments. Now, you should expect your auditor to discuss the certificate application with you and make sure that you agree with how it's prepared. Our process for review and approval of audit packages is adhered to for short notice audits. Obviously, if we are told that this is an emergency situation, that you need an expedited processing of your certificate update, we will attempt to honor that request. But bear in mind, while that process is being carried out, the certificate that you hold is still valid. We still stand behind the validity of that certificate in its current form while the update is being processed. Okay, we're going to shift gears now and talk about the dispute process. Now, obviously, PJR, we're a large certification body. You may or may not be aware, we actually have over 6,000 active certifications worldwide. We cover a lot of different countries and territories. And when you consider how large our net is, it's rather remarkable that on average, we have fewer than 20 disputes a year. So you may not have even been aware how this dispute process is carried out. Your auditors are required to mention it during opening and closing meetings during the audit, but maybe you've never been told how this process works. So we thought it would be beneficial to walk you through the process as part of this presentation. Now, the term dispute has no official definition, neither in ISO 17021 or even the 19011 auditing guidance standard. Now, the term appeal is used in section 9.7 of ISO 17021, but that term also has no official definition. So disputes or appeals, these are generally understood as an officially filed disagreement on the part of the auditee to one or more of the conclusions reached in the audit process. And typically, what we're disputing, obviously, is one or more of the nonconformances that have been written. Now, a dispute is typically going to be filed for one of two things. The auditor and the auditee are at an impasse as to the merits of the evidence. In other words, we presented a set of documents or a response as the evidence, and the auditor is saying this is not acceptable, and the auditee is saying this is acceptable. The other potential dispute is going to be if the auditor and the auditee are at an impasse as to the merits of the audit criteria. In other words, the auditor is interpreting a clause from ISO 9001 in a particular fashion, and the auditee is saying, no, that's not what that clause is supposed to mean. So it's either going to be a disagreement on the merits of the evidence or on the merits of the audit criteria. Now, before you go through the steps of filing a dispute, we have trained our auditors to be forthright in sharing suspected nonconformances with their auditees pretty much the minute they're discovered. So in other words, if the auditor thinks they have a nonconformance, they need to say so immediately. And that is intended to give the auditee a chance to present the available evidence. You know, I always use this kind of verbiage when I conduct an opening meeting. I say to the client, I'm going to tell you because I want to make as informed a decision as I can possibly make. I want to have all the evidence that you have to share with me. But if I've seen all of the available evidence and I still feel that it's a nonconformance, well, at that point, we're going to agree to disagree and move on. And that's important. You know, it's tempting when you're in the heat of the moment, the middle of the audit, to argue the merits of the nonconformance. But you have to understand that time spent arguing the merits of a nonconformance, that's time that's being taken away from the auditing process. And now potentially we're going to run into a situation where the auditor may not be able to meet their audit objectives, and we may have to assign additional audit time. Now, obviously, we don't want to do that, but if we've lost 2 hours because we were arguing about a nonconformance, that's 2 hours that we need to finish in another fashion, in another way. So again, if you and the auditor have looked at all of the available evidence, if you've put it all on the table and the auditor has concluded there is a nonconformance, it's best to just say, okay, we will handle this through the dispute process. So how does the dispute process cycle through? Well, In 17021, section 971, PGR is required to have a documented process to receive, evaluate, and make decisions on appeals. And our documented process is outlined in Procedure Pro 10, officially titled Dispute Procedure. Now, Pro 10 is one of several documents that is available for download directly from the PGR website. If you go to www.pgr.com, go to the bottom of the page, the first page that you reach, you're going to look for a link entitled Registration Document Download. Pro 10 is one of the items that is available for download. Now, your dispute process is going to begin by reaching out to the team here at headquarters and requesting a copy of what's called Form 217 Dispute Resolution Request Form. Now, this document is discussed within the Pro 10. Now, there are a couple of bylaws that you need to be aware of. Now, these are both discussed within the Pro 10 itself. First of all dispute requests need to be received no less than 15 calendar days from the end of the audit. We need to have that request as soon as possible, but certainly within a 15-day window. And also, if you have multiple nonconformances that you're disputing, let's say that the auditor wrote six nonconformances and you're planning to dispute three of them, we do need a separate F217 for each nonconformance you are disputing. Now, as you read through the 217, there are different spaces for you to record different information. At the very top, you're going to capture your name, who your auditor was, the date that the request is being filed, and your resolution request. The resolution request is a four-part entry. First of all, there's a space called certification criteria. This is where you're going to capture the nonconformance number as assigned by the auditor. You'll get that right from the nonconformance report. The auditor or CB finding. This should be a summary or even a direct copy of the nonconformance that was written by the auditor. The third part is called justification for dispute request. Now, this should be a summary of why you are disagreeing with the nonconformance. Now, this should include any points of disagreement on the evidence, the audit criteria, any other relevant points. You need to outline why you are disputing the auditor's nonconformance. And then the fourth item is called description of attachments. Now, this should be a summary, as detailed as you can make it, of what you've provided to PJR to substantiate your dispute. Now, this can be in any format, PDF, JPEG, etc. The more detail you give us on the 217, the better position we're going to be in to make an informed decision on your behalf. Now, once we've received all the necessary dispute paperwork from you, we will act to schedule what's called a dispute hearing. Now, the dispute hearing is led by our dispute chairperson. We do have a designated representative of PJR where this is a primary part of their job description. They handle these dispute filings. And the dispute hearing is going to include someone from your organization. It's going to include the auditor that wrote the contested nonconformance, and it's going to include a dispute panel. And who makes up the dispute panel is going to be three lead auditors from the scheme that are going to make the final decision on the disputed item. And each side is given ample time to present their side of the situation. Now, it's obviously possible the dispute panel is going to have questions for both sides, but the important thing is you will have your say and the auditor will have their say and the panel will make an impartial decision. Now, once the dispute hearing is concluded, the dispute panel will have a private discussion and render the final decision on the disputed items. Now, the dispute panel's decision is considered final and binding. You will receive a copy of the completed dispute decisions. Now, in terms of possible dispute process outcomes, these fall into one of three basic categories. If the disputed nonconformance is upheld, this means that the dispute committee has rejected your argument and you must respond to the nonconformance in the prescribed fashion. If the disputed nonconformance is overturned, in that case, obviously, the dispute committee has accepted your argument and they will instruct the auditor to remove the nonconformance from the audit report. You should, in that case, expect to get an updated audit report. Now, the third possibility is the disputed nonconformance is upheld but reduced. Now, that's going to refer to a situation, possibly, where a portion of the nonconformance is seen as legitimate, but another portion of it needs to be removed. It's also possible that a major nonconformance may get reduced to a minor nonconformance. Again, in these cases, you should expect to receive an updated audit report. In conclusion, we want our clients, again, to think of us as a trusted partner in the certification process, not just on audit day, but beyond. We do hope that you will keep us in the loop when things come up and let us use our many resources to your benefit. I would like to invite you to tune in for one of our other webinars. We have a presentation on ISO 9001 entitled Knowing What to Expect to Ensure a Stress-Free Audit. This one is shown on a semi-annual basis. This one goes over some of the more common issues from ISO 9001 audits and what is typically expected. We also have a special presentation on exemptions and what can and when cannot be excused in an audit assessment. We have webinars on a wide variety of other topics, stage one auditing, IATF 16949, and many other topics. If you'd like to be kept informed of the latest news automatically, the easiest way for you to do that is to visit our website at www.pgr.com. If you go to the bottom of the page, enter your email address in the provided space and click subscribe, you will be opted in for updates on new webinars and changes to the standards and other points of helpful information. I do thank you for your time. I'm going to go ahead and unlock the question portion of the dashboard if anybody has any questions on what we've reviewed today. Okay, well, thank you everyone for your time and have a great day.